This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters, and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
I am thrilled, Josh, to announce this week on the Always Cheating Podcast, I am a Crystal Palace fan.
Oh, yeah, send me to Selhurst Park, man.
They were irresistible against Manchester United. Irresistible.
I wanted to clap when they came off the team bus. You know, I wanted to be there. Neither of us had Man United players. I was so... like, I don't want to about that match. I had a good morning. I brought in James Rodriguez. I was feeling good about my team. I got a brace from Mitrovic. I was like, okay, this is everything is good. And now this Man United match is going to kill me, you know, without any players. And so I actually went. I went out and I went with my daughter. We bought a new goldfish. Okay, it was like it was a real day.
Purchase.
We got in a car and bought a goldfish. So I got back and was delighted to find out that it was a 3-0 match, and maybe even or 3-1. That is, in hindsight, with the one goal being Donny van der Beek unassisted. Goal, which is just amazing. So in hindsight, maybe a little clear that Man United would need a little more time to adjust. I mean, you know, I don't think they had played a single match. I don't think they'd even played a friendly I know they played like a closed door one with Aston Villa or whatever, but you know, Palace already played twice. They played last weekend and then they played at midweek. So a lot more match experience, and that, you know, in hindsight, of course, that was going to be a factor.
And in addition to some preseason matches, which, okay, so the Palace-Manchester United match was twofold for me. First of all, as we talked about, Martial was a big target for us. Ings to Martial, let's do it. And I ended up making other changes in my team that we'll talk about in a little bit. And I was scared of what the potential could have been going into United Palace. Was Martial going to go off? Did I miss an opportunity there? What ended up happening was being reminded of the opportunity that I missed with Wilfred Zaha, because we were talking about putting our game week one squads together, and I kind of thought I was crazy. I didn't think you disagreed with me that I had Zaha in my tinker before the game week one deadline. And
no, I called him bad on the podcast. I straight up was like, because he was bad last year. He was. He wanted to leave the club. They didn't sell him, and he sulked for a whole season. He looks like a completely different player 2 weeks into this season.
It's really the question that we will seek to answer for the rest of our FPL careers is, do our eyes deceive us? Do our eyes deceive years of experience? And Zaha has been like Hazard light in terms of FPL torment. Zaha will have moments of brilliance. You bring him in and you wait a month for him to even come close to replicating that. And ultimately, I didn't have the courage to go with what my eye test was telling me preseason. And now I have the unesteemed privilege of sitting here telling you, well, I had targeted him correctly preseason.
But this it's relevant though, because you are now, you're on your wild card. Brandon's wild card is active.
Yeah.
Any podcast where one of the hosts has a wild card, there's a little extra juice on that podcast, Brandon. There's a lot going on. Your fantasy brain is on fire right now. So and I think it's relevant to talk about this stuff too, because there is kind of like a Schrodinger's cat type thing that happens sometimes where you're like, do I actually want this player, or is there this knowledge that the FPL community is – I actually didn't even know Schrodinger's cat is really like a relevant, I just want to throw that in there. Probably pretentious. But, you know, like is the FPL community and the sort of osmosis of these players, like Daniel Podden's being kind of the perfect example. Is Daniel Podden's a great fantasy pick, or is he somebody that everybody is talking about and now that's going to like infest my brain and change my own perspective on this? Are you going to out Zaha yourself, or are you just going to listen to good advice, you know, and bring in a player who you should?
Yeah. It is tricky. And I'm on my wild card. A lot of managers out there would say it's too early to wild card because we're still just getting a handle on the season. And I do agree with that. But, and Podence is a good example where you're saying, what do we actually really know about Podence just yet? After just what, I mean, and we're recording this Sunday evening, as is our wonted, always cheating, and we haven't yet seen them play against Manchester City. There's a lot more to learn about Wolves, who looked brilliant against Sheffield United last weekend.
Yep.
I don't know. And I think triggering my wild card, I'm not here to say, hey, I've got the correct bead on all these players now, and I'm ready to create the best team. With the wild card, I think it's more just an admission of the structural integrity of my FPL team coming out of game week two is bad. Yeah. We have not passed inspection. We need a rebuild, and the rebuild is to put you in a better situation to make further moves. And I burned four going into game week two with the expectation that I'd burn four again going into game week three. And the wild card that I'm playing going into game week three now isn't me saying, well, I'm going to get it right this time. I fully expect to be burning points and tinkering through game weeks four all the way till Christmas. That's just the way it's
going to
be.
All the way to game week 38, Brandon. So, all right. So we're going to talk about wild cards in just a second here, because the theme of this episode is wild card talk. And, you know, even if you're not on a wild card this week, I think it's useful to think about, because, you know, the first thing I do when I look at a wild card is I start to look at the fixtures ahead, right? It's obviously form, but you know the form players are ready. I mean, we already kind of know who those players are. But, you know, if they're in form and then the three of their next four are difficult away matches, then that has to at least be a consideration that you factor in. You know, certainly, especially when it comes to defenders. I mean, someone like Castagna, the Leicester defender, really attractive pick.
Can't stand you.
But does play
Shouts
away.
To Rockstar.
But does play away to Man City in game week three, right? So that is a factor that you have to weigh in when you bring in a 5.5 million defender. So game week two, it's whatever it is, 8/10 of the way concluded. Two matches tomorrow. Interestingly enough, even though there's a Man City squad playing, not massive, I would say, fantasy implications for a lot of managers, though Kevin De Bruyne's ownership is annoyingly high already, I will say. Yeah. I think that it's something like, is it 30% already? It's too high. It's 33%. Oh, God. So if he goes off tomorrow, we're all in trouble. Yeah. It's been a very strange game week. One of the wildest I can remember, especially this early on in the season. I'm on 59 points. I still have Romain Saïss to play tomorrow. 59 points feels pretty good in some ways. The one move I made was Bowen to James Rodriguez, and that was a 10-point swing. I didn't burn points. I didn't lose my mind. I followed kind of route one fantasy, which is look at your team, find the weakest link, fix it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That simple. Didn't, you know, and I didn't go for the sexy Man United players. I just went for the boom. That's the best pick for this situation. And so, honestly, it would have been even worse if it, you know, and I got 11 points from Ings, 12 from Mitrovic. Aubameyang, fine, whatever, 5 points, shows just that he's just not really worth it as a 12 million Mm-hmm. That's a 12 million fantasy asset. And so 59 and with one to go, it feels okay. What made everything so, and I'd probably be in a Green Arrow if it were not for two players, one being Heung-Min Son, the other being Harry Kane, and the absolute annihilation that took place this morning. 5-2 does not paint a picture of what it was kind of like the first half was reasonably, I don't know, was it competitive? It was a little more competitive at least.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was a little bit like, remember that Man City Newcastle match where Aguero scored 5 goals, game week eight, 4 years mm-hmm. ago or something like that.
I remember it distinctly because I believe I had Aguero captained.
Yeah, me too. And he was very popular captain pick that week. But I just mean like but it was a little different in that situation because this was a ton of people had transferred Son out going into this game week. I mean, John Arbaroth tweeted us and said, it's probably the worst moment of my 10 years playing FBL. Was turning on the phone after a great afternoon with my other half to see that Son, who I just sold for Rashford, had done his thing. Mm-hmm. Any tips to make fantasy fun again after this type of situation? Brandon, this is what we're all about this year. Hashtag MFFA.
Yeah.
What's your perspective? A lot of people made a move like this. They brought in Bruno or Rashford. Many people burned 4 to do it. I've seen a lot of recrimination here. And, you know, we're not really the put you on the psychologist corner podcast. But, you know, what would you and I have both been in those situations before. What would you say to somebody who did something like that this game week?
Well, I just ask the question. So I'd talk to John and I'd say, how does this happen? Not how did you make that transfer, but how did Son end up scoring 4? How did Spurs end up scoring 5 goals against Southampton? Turn the tables from Spurs to Southampton, and you'll have fun just thinking about being inside of Hasenhüttl's head right now. What an absolute colossal moron this guy is. Fire this idiot. The high line, it was like after the second goal, stop with the high line. Just, it's not working. And I can see how Hasenhüttl is like, well, we have to keep doing this or else we won't learn how to actually play them.
Yeah, it's the Red Bull style, right? It's the 4-2-2-2. And it's like everyone who comes out of the Red Bull school does this. And but apparently there is a massive learning curve because this is the same team that lost 9-0 at home to Leicester last season.
Yeah. There was a record of that match. Yeah. And they look like total fools. And looking back at that 9-0 loss that they had last season, you have to think about the emotional scars that still exist on that squad. And I've heard Scotty Parker for Fulham talk a lot about what was it like dealing with this Fulham team after their humiliating 2018-19 Premier League campaign, and how he basically had to coach that team not only through a promotion season in the championship, but also coach them basically through not being emotionally scarred by being whipping boys. And Hasenhüttl might think he's training them to be some sort of high-flying, high-line-holding team, but in the process, he's mentally breaking down his team, and it's a disaster. And Spurs, so my response is Spurs were just the beneficiary of a bad mistake by Southampton. It could have been Chelsea, it could have been United, it could have been any team. What we still know about Spurs, I think, coming out of this is that they're still managed by Jose Mourinho, and he's gonna find a way to alienate everyone in that club. Rest assured.
Yeah, I mean, I just think you can't be so results oriented. I mean, yeah, the results are so extreme that it makes it seem like you made a bad decision, but I'm not even sure that it is a bad decision. I mean, yeah, the results are, paint a certain kind of picture. Yes, clearly, but to me, Spurs looked bad. They looked bad in game week 1 at home to Everton. Son was active, but that team did not look like they were capable of scoring 3 goals in a match, let alone 5, let alone this dominating performance. They played away on Thursday in the Europa League and they barely won that match. It took 2 late goals in that match to win. This is their third match in 8 days. They did not look like a team that was at all impressive going into that match. Man United have played incredible, especially at home this last season. They were playing a Crystal Palace team that was playing like their 9th and 10th choice center backs. It was like going to that match. Yeah. I was like, I cannot believe I don't have a Man United player, because they're playing Sako, who like just came back from injury, and
Kouyaté.
And Kouyaté is not even a center back, right? Yeah. I was like, this is going to be like destruction. Like there's I don't care how much they like, you know, park the bus or whatever cliche you want to use. Like there was no way that Man United were going to score 3 in that match. And, you know, so it's, yeah, sometimes the results make it look like you made a bad decision, but often you didn't, or you just got unlucky or whatever. I mean, this is fantasy sports. Like, it's not like, you know, there's some Nostradamus figure who actually knows the results of these matches, you know?
Yeah.
They haven't been played, you know? So all you can do is make a reasonable assumption and, you know, hope that it works out. I mean, it's kind of that simple. And, you know, and so I don't really know. I mean, like, yeah, I would feel bad too, but I also just feel like there's a lot of people right now who are, you know, taking this a little, it's probably because we're all home, right? And we're just not going out and doing as much stuff. And like, it's sort of this, like the professionalization of fantasy sports or something has made everybody treat this like a much bigger deal than it is. Yeah. And I love fantasy sports too. Obviously, we've done 250 episodes of this podcast, but you have to keep things in perspective here. I mean, we're, you know, it's a 20-point swing out of a season where you're probably going to score about 2,250 points, right? It's less than 1% of the number of points you're going to score this season. It's nothing. It really isn't. And so I think that's something you really have to keep in mind.
Well, and it's the story of my game week too, where John says, I got the decision wrong and I'm getting punished for it. In my game week 2 transfers, I got the decisions right and I still got punished for it. I ended up burning 4 to bring in an Everton and a Leeds player. That's a combined 9 goals that Everton and Leeds scored, 5 and 4. And I managed to bring in a combined 3 points between Lucas Dean and Jack Harrison.
And it had to sting. Yeah.
It did sting. The Dean one, I don't know. The Dean one I actually feel better about because I caught a price rise, and Dean is a player that I think I want to hang on to, even through a wild card. Yeah, right. And, you know, he's taking his set pieces. He's doing his FPL thing. Jack Harrison was just very peripheral in that very odd Leeds-Fulham match. But, you know, it's very easy to read the game in a way that works for your FPL team and still not walk away with any FPL points. FPL is just absolutely crushingly cruel to people who are real fans of football and know how to read the game. It doesn't mean you're a bad football watcher.
I always think about this quote from Michael Shore, who is the creator of, big sports fan in America, creator of The Office and Parks and Rec, I guess co-creator of The Office, Parks and Rec, The Good Place, a bunch of other shows. Massive Boston sports fan. But he was once talking to somebody and somebody said, well, why don't you're a huge sports fan, why do you do fantasy sports? And he's like, you ever seen anyone who plays fantasy sports? They're always miserable. It's so true. And it's like, it's part of the misery is part of the fun, but you do have to remember that that the misery is part of it. You know, it's the escape, you know, I mean, the misery to me that I don't mind if it makes me miserable, as long as it doesn't like start to interfere with the rest of my life. But, you know, a little bit of misery is kind of fine because it's all part of the game of it, you know, and
That's what makes the joy more explosive, much like a goal being scored. You know, sometimes you wait 90 minutes for that decisive goal to be scored. It makes it all the sweeter. And maybe you're going to finish on a 200K rank or even, you know, 2 million rank. As long as you have that one or two moments this season where you explode with emotional joy, it will happen and it'll be worth it.
Yeah. And then go on Twitter and you know, and share the word or go wherever, go to Reddit, you know, go tell everybody. All right.
Call your mom.
I said we were going to do psychology. I guess we a little bit slipped in there. Let's take a very quick break. And then Brad, we're going to do some wild card talk. Okay.
Great.
Brandon, before we do the wildcard talk, a quick shout out. We've been trying to move these a little further into the pod, possibly a little too far last time. It's like 90 minutes in. But just a quick note, if you want to say thanks and support the cheaters, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. All of our Patreon supporters get access to our Slack, our upcoming Harvey Milk Mustache Cup. Brandon, you and I had like some proper, like in-depth conversation about this cup. It's launching in game week 5. So keep your eyes out for the Harvey Milk Mustache Cup. They get the Week in Review newsletter, which I have to say, of all of our Patreon features, that seems like the one that's almost the most popular right now. This mini league mate feature. Everybody loved getting this. It's a weekly newsletter that all of our Patreon supporters receive. Tells you who did well, who did poorly. It's a lot of fun. Brandon posts that on the Patreon page, and then you'll just get that in your inbox, on your email inbox. Patreon supporters at the Lord Sorloth level and up get access to a bonus podcast every week. We've already done, I think, 4 or 5 of those this season, and then in the preseason. I think we're going to work on some guests and things like that as well. And then at the highest tiers, you get our new Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt. Quick shout out to our new patrons this week. Rebrecht Dems, David Fletcher, Brian Tierney, Joshua Wilson, George Kenny, Jamie Pham, A.A. Ranjan's son, Joseph Valdez, Paul Robertson, the Pookie tier, Michelle Nimesto, and Jord the Gamer. Thank you to our newest patrons, Brandon.
All right, yeah, once again, that's patreon.com/alwayscheating. And a quick word for our great friends at Fantasy Football Hub, fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always. Listen, this is your one-stop shop for all things FPL related. You can read, listen to, and watch videos from the greatest minds managing today. They're sharing their team's great game week team reveals just before the deadlines. Really helpful to see where a lot of these people are at heading into the weekend. All those thoughtful videos and articles that can help frame your thinking. Also, access just all the straight data. If you don't want to go into the herd mentality, copy somebody else's team, Fantasy Football Hub has the data to just help you make your own decisions. That includes real Opta stats and easy to use tools that synthesize those stats for you. So if you want to check out the hub, visit fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always and visit that site to get 15% off whichever tier you choose.
Yep. And I'll just add that I have never been like, I actually had never really read a lot of the team reveal articles, and I've just started doing it this season. And I really do find it helpful. I think it's really useful to, I wouldn't even say copying, but just like just popping in there just to see what how people are thinking and in their transfer decisions. And it actually got me sort of going back in our Slack too and using and talking to people on there about strategy and just sort of like sometimes you actually like we talked about the herd mentality earlier, but sometimes you do just need someone else's perspective on transfers. So again, fantasyfootballhub.co.uk/always for 15% off whichever tier you choose. Brandon, we'll be right back with Wildcard Talk. Brandon, we're back. Wildcard Talk. Two questions to kick things off. FPL Mikey says, I've seen a lot of wildcards activated. Are people being too impatient? Francis says, seen a lot of managers not wildcarding. Are people being too passive? Which is it, Brandon? This is you. The emblem of what a wild card manager looks like. So how are you feeling about things?
Well, all respect to Francis and Mikey, who I love and cherish, but the way these questions are phrased is very revealing. Is they want to know, are other people being too passive? Are other people being too patient? There's a lot of concern about what other managers are doing. And the wild card to me is just a stark analysis of my personal team.
Right.
Of course, we want to warn people of being impatient. See a lot of rate my teams around the Slack from our supporters, and they say, I'm thinking about wildcarding, and you say, whoa, step back. Actually, your team looks pretty good. So there is, and I don't know if I can put my finger on what the difference is between the two teams. Maybe you can help me with that, Josh. But there are teams where you say, step back. Actually, your team is pretty good. Maybe you're a -4 away from something that makes you feel really comfortable going into game week 3. And then there are teams where I would classify my team as, there's just no structural integrity. I've got it wrong. It was pretty clear in game week 1 that something was off kilter. And I tried to repair it going into game week 2 with a -4. And that almost made it more revealing, the imbalance in my team. So I think,
what do you think happened? Do you think that, I mean, you know, how do you end up in a position? Like, I mean, I honestly may end up having a wild card now too, cause I've got a bunch of St. Maximum injury and Bissouma red card, which is still, like, it's so annoying. So, I mean, like, what do you think? Do you think that you were just, that you weren't prioritizing correctly? Do you think that the game, cause I think this is useful for people who are still on the fence about a wild card. Like, do you feel like, there are players who have revealed themselves who you really want? Or, I mean, it sounds like it's the other way around, which is that you just don't like your team. You just don't like how things are looking moving forward. And it's just time to get out sweep out the rubbish.
Well, I think that that's another way to look at it is it the players in your squad or is it the teams represented in your squad? And what I got wrong going into game week one was just representing the wrong teams in my squad. And I think a point that we need to talk more and more about throughout the course of the season, and was it Fabio Borges who talked about this on his Meet the Manager article in Fantasy Football Scout, of just not having players on bottom half of the table teams, and I overrepresented those players in my Game Week 1 squad. And I think I blew it in over-prioritizing having two 12 million midfielders on my team, and that caused me to focus too much on too many bargain assets to make that work. And so St. Maximin, one that both burned us. Mitrovic delivered on a brace in game week two, and this is one where I've just like recalibrated my thought. Like, Mitrovic is doing exactly what we all predicted he would do, and in a sense that's good. But what we didn't anticipate was how precarious Fulham as a full, as an entire team was going to look.
Did you, by the way, just a quick side note, did you know that he called a penalty on the pitch? Because it was that first pen. I could not. Oh, yeah. I didn't know what was happening. I was like, it was weird because everyone like lined up for a corner and I was like, wait, was that foul in the box? You know, like it was like this weird moment. You're like, I think that's a penalty. It was very
strange. And it wasn't like the ref was mysterious about it. The ref even pointed to the spot. And I think that's actually pretty damning of Fulham. That is how disengaged the majority of players on Fulham are right now. And I spent some time last week saying, listen, save your hot takes on Fulham for a month from now, but it's not looking great here. No. So
I wonder if you'd lean into that, if you'd walk away. I mean, you were impassioned last week.
I was impassioned. So, you know, and even Leeds, like and I think there is a way into Leeds for people looking for fourth midfielders or third strikers, but it was the Leeds, Newcastle, Fulham representation, Southampton, two Southampton players. Ings, you're out of here. Three Southampton players. We've already talked about Hasenhüttl and about how he is he's lost his mind. And Aubameyang already had to go. And structurally, there are two things that are glaring, that are missing from my current squad. And there are two teams that I would say are emblematic of what we want out of FPL. And we're avoiding players on bottom half of the table teams. Good players and bad teams, we're avoiding them. Also, an under-the-radar concern, or a too much talked about concern, is rotation. What are your friends in FPL? They are top half teams who are surging, who do not have European commitments and are priced in the mid range. And that's Everton and Wolves. And, you know, very curious to see how Wolves look against Manchester City. But I think right now what's painfully clear to a lot of managers is Wolves and Everton are where you need to be putting a ton of your resources, because these squads without commitments that a lot of the top six teams are going to have are just going to be delivering FPL points and consistent team sheets week after week. And I need to load up on them. So that's been my focus and my aim in restructuring during the wild card.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I think, the Everton thing, that was where I ultimately, and because I was really thinking about Greenwood versus James Rodriguez for my game week two transfer. If I also thought I might just keep Bowen and go Ings to Martial, which geez, I'd really be, that's like a 20-point swing right there. So I think that I think you're right. When it comes to Everton, we now, and maybe we should have been a little more inclined to think about this going into the season, because Ancelotti is just like it's a world-class manager. And I think him being there allowed them to recruit some massive talent. And I think we now, the rule about not having players on really bad teams or not overloading on players from bad teams is just a really strong rule, and one that maybe you and I did slip away from a little bit when picking some of our players. But I think that we can now, but that's really bottom half of it. I think, you know, it's, you can't just have a team full of top four players. And what you want are those players, like you said, who are just kind of below that, especially if they don't have European commitments. And Everton now look like a team that could really challenge for, I don't know if a Champions League spot is possible or not, but you know, maybe they're a fifth place club this year. Like if Everton finished fifth right now, that would not be surprising to me very much at all. Their defense, I'm still a little not sure about. Lucas Digne is a great fantasy asset, but some shaky moments for sure in that West Brom match. So yeah, I think you're right to be looking there. I mean, it's a great rule in general in football, right? Like this is why you always want to try to get a team like Chelsea when they occasionally finish in like 11th place the season before, because it's a really talented team, but they don't have to play all these European matches.
Yeah, right. So there's a lot of bargain hunting in FPL, and I think a reason why a lot of people trigger early wildcards is it's easy to get drawn in bargain hunting, and it's even easier to get it wrong.
All right, so that brings us to Boston Prof's question. Imagine we were starting all over again, going into game week three, and again, we don't know what Man City is going to look like tomorrow, so maybe they get a little move to the side for a second, but let's talk about your wild card. What does your team look like now that you have a chance to start completely fresh? You don't have to go player by player, but just who are the players that you've really prioritized on this wild card?
Well, yeah, I'm doing the thing right now that is a very in the weeds, nerdy manager to do, where I'm just pre-triggering the wild card button, just bringing in a bunch of players where I think their prices are going to rise with the hope that, and I think Rodriguez and Dominic Calvert-Lewin are two of these players where they'll probably price rise at least 0.2, where you would actually make money just in the midst of a wild card. But that's kind of that's an unproductive way of thinking, because Rodriguez and Dominic Calvert-Lewin are likely players that you're just going to keep on a wild card. So why are you bothering? Like all the players that are skyrocketing in price. And I mean, just to underline the fact that I'm not trying to chase last week's points. I'm not trying to chase players here.
But you do have Son, Kane, Rodriguez. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I think that's a good point. Spurs are not on my radar at all. And to go back to what we were saying about Southampton, I don't really know that we know anything else about Spurs after that performance. And I'm still not interested. And also, those players are just too expensive. I think I'm going to end up back in square one. So Jimenez and Dominic Calvert-Lewin are A-plus priorities for my wild card, all the reasons that we expressed. And in the midfield, Salah stays. James Rodriguez, 7.5, as you've already experienced, Josh. This is A-plus value. And the defense gets a little tricky because I am trying to grab all of these players from these teams that I want. I'm trying to maximize the wild card. Where does that leave room for Liverpool defense? And even though we saw a clean sheet from Liverpool against Chelsea, Chelsea just self-destructed and kind of handed that clean sheet. And Alisson also saved it for everyone there. So still some question marks about Liverpool's defense, though. Didn't we see this from Liverpool last season, right, Josh? Like everyone was like, let's double Liverpool D, and then we all fell away from it because we were unconvinced. And then guess what? They like put together 14 clean sheets in the middle of the season.
Christensen really is on my negative list right now. And honestly, it has nothing to do with fantasy. It's just, I was enjoying that match. Like, that match felt like it came from like a different season. After all of the craziness of this weekend, the first 40 minutes of that match were pretty good, pretty well played. You know, you had chances on both sides. I thought Timo Werner looked really interesting. I would say that they were about equal in terms of chances, and you know, I didn't feel like Liverpool were dominating, certainly. And and you know, it was kind of a bummer that that the match, really the life kind of got sucked out of it, I thought, after that red card. I mean, I don't know if you disagree, but even those goals scored were just kind of hack. I mean, the first goal was beautiful, but the second one was just like, okay, you know, this is just like silly.
Well, yeah, the less said about Kepa, the better. It's just, can you believe Kepa's contract is 7 years? 7 years. It's ridiculous.
Really, yeah.
Chelsea are just absolutely screwed. It's like beyond Mesut Ozil levels at this point for them. There's no way anyone is buying him. So they're just going to have to eat this guy's salary years. And there's no way they can continue playing him because he's a disaster. So
they've got this new signing that's supposed to, I think it's supposed to happen this week. So I think it'll, you know, he's probably played his last match for the club.
Right. So I think the things that alleviate me of anxiety now playing the wild card, I feel that I don't have to deal with, that other managers might be struggling with, are Spurs and Manchester United. And it's kind of the opposite case in each, in that Manchester United, it's not that like, oh boy, they're going to be a terrible team for the rest of the season. Obviously not. Like, they have great players. They will produce FPL points throughout the season, but it's going to be a slow start for them. And even if it's not a slow start for them, if suddenly they flip on the switch in game week 3, I can come on to that. I just don't think that they're going to be surging going into game week 3, which would be the concern for FPL managers who are chasing. Right. That's not a big concern for me.
So you're not you're not planning to have any Man United players in your team then?
No Man United players and no Spurs players for me. I'm not convinced by what they did to Southampton. The focus for me is two premium assets in the midfield with Salah and either KDB or Sterling. I'm excited to see how Manchester City look against Wolves on Monday. And from there, this was an issue with my midfield, whereas I previously didn't have a pocket for a 7 to 8 million midfielder. So you've got Zaha, you know, who probably that ship has probably sailed at this point. I think James Rodriguez is clearly a standout pick there, and I'm excited to have two premiums plus a pocket for a player in James Rodriguez's price tag, and I feel like that makes me much more flexible in the midfield. So I'm no Manchester United or Spurs in the midfield, nor up front. It looks like I'll be Jimenez, Calvert-Lewin, and a decision I have to make is, do I keep Timo Werner? And if West Bromwich Albion didn't look like they have looked the last 2 weeks, I would just say, you know what, Chelsea are going to need some time, just like Manchester United, to sort this out. But I was convinced enough. Like, Werner struck me as like a one-man wrecking crew against Liverpool. Mm-hmm. Every time he got the ball, he went into what you like to see, just like total athlete brain. And it wasn't like he put his head down Jordan Ayew style barreling toward goal. He just looked convinced of his ability. And he was ready to do it on his own if he had to.
The shame of it is that there was no one to give the ball to him, right? I mean, Kai Havertz, again, I guess he looked a little better. I mean, he does not look like he's ready to be starting for Chelsea. He just doesn't. And you know, I think with Ziyech, I cannot believe
it. Ziyech.
Thank you. This is going to be my new Doherty Doherty. And with him out and Pulisic out, I think the concern with Werner is just, is this guy, I don't know. Like, I mean, if he's doing it all, if it feels like he's doing it all himself, I agree. It's like he looks great and James looks great. And then there's like nine other players in the pitch for Chelsea. And it's, Mason Mount looks like he's working hard. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's I've been super impressed with him. You know, so yeah, it really just has been Werner. It feels like just sort of trying to do it all alone. And
Right. It's probably a problem with Frank Lampard, where he's not had a lot of time with this new squad. Lots of new players coming in. It's not going to gel completely, but they get on the pitch. Even the old players, like Conte, didn't seem to have a clue as to what his job was against Liverpool. We've seen him do well. Like, he even scored against Liverpool last season, but there was no conceivable game plan for Chelsea.
He had a moment where he was like 5 feet in front of goal. He was like in the box, and he suddenly turned back and like basically booted the ball back for safety. And I was like, as you don't necessarily want, you know, your midfielder to play that safe, like literally in front of goal and decide to boot it out and restart the play. There really didn't seem like they had a number 10 in this match. And that's my worry with Werner. I mean, obviously at the moment I'm not planning a wild card. So I'm planning to have him for the West Brom match. I don't think I would have it in me to captain him. And we'll talk about that when we preview game week 3, but yeah, I think it's tricky. I mean, I think one thing one thing that you'll have to think about as well is whether you just go ahead and, you know, whether you give Gabriel Jesus a shot, because now it sounds like Aguero is going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, and which probably means like 3 months by Aguero standards.
Right. That is true.
Aguero's injuries are always over promise, under deliver.
Right. That's true. So we'll see when we actually see Aguero again. But I mean, Jesus is available for the same price as Werner. So I'm not trying to make things overly complicated here, but just I think that is something I suspect he'll be reckoning with.
For sure. For sure. And that's fine. Like, if I reckon with it and I go one way or another, I just want to stress this because I think a lot of people are going to be anxious over wild cards this week. It's okay if you go Werner over Jesus or vice versa, and you have to switch it up going into game week 4. The mission of your wild card this week is not to get it 100% right and correct whatever sins you committed in game week 1. You're just starting to turn the ship around. And I think there is a lot to be said about what Joe at the Scout talks about, just in terms of price allocation from your strikers, midfielders, and to your defense. Like, sometimes the wild card is more just to bring balance to your price structure.
Right. Yeah, that is true. And I think that is something that, I can see why you made the Harrison move, for example. It just, you needed to shake things up a little bit in the midfield. I would be wildcarding as well, I think. I mean, our teams aren't that different, but they're different enough that I feel like I have Rodriguez already. You know, it's just these little things. I have Sace already. You know, those two players alone are almost enough to stop you from having to do that. And I think it's really interesting. I mean, what I have on the outside now is just a little bit of that. I've got to avoid wildcard FOMO. You know, which is like, you know, like somebody, let's say your co-host on a podcast has a wild card and you're sort of like, if I had a wild card, what can I do right now? And
You're in the perfect position. Yeah. And I feel like this happens most seasons, is I wild card. And then 1 or 2 weeks later, you wild card and you take my wild card team and basically upgrade it with 1 or 2 more weeks of knowledge. And so that's,
we'll see.
That is a position of strength as well.
Yeah, and I think you know, Burnley looked poor enough that I think I can keep Ings for another week, and Werner, Mitro at home. It's tricky. I think if you're on the fence about wild carding, my advice is typically to not do it. I think it's like you said. It's, you know, wild card is not a decision that's made with everyone else's team in mind. It should be done, you know, in a quiet room by yourself in a moment of great concentration, sort of like how Newton came up with calculus. You know, it's sort of that same, idea. So a couple additional wildcard questions. I think we've already talked. There's a question from Praz about which teams we could trust. I think we talked about that already. Just one more question here. Okay. Actually two. One is, are you, so it's just going to be one Man City player for you. That's how you're feeling right now at the moment on your wildcard.
Yeah, I mean, you do bring up Jesus. I will 100% have a Manchester City midfielder alongside a Liverpool midfielder. So it's weird that I can downgrade from Aubameyang on Arsenal, who, while Arsenal have looked fine and Arsenal will do well this season, I can't believe I'm saving money going from an Arsenal midfielder to an elite Manchester City midfielder. That's kind of bananas to me.
Yeah, they can go to KDB or or Sterling. Yep.
So I'll have at least one, but at most I will have two Manchester City players. I will have zero Manchester United players. I will have zero Spurs players. I will have, I have Reece James in my squad just for price rise purposes. I'm like, he's probably going to be a Liverpool defender at the end of the day. So at most one Chelsea player, which would be Timo Werner if. So it's largely focused on Wolves, Everton, Manchester City, and Liverpool. Those are my focuses.
Okay. I think that makes sense. I think it also helps to clarify your thinking, because if you get to Friday and you look at your team and suddenly you've got, you know, I don't know, Ings is back and Egan is suddenly in your team and, you know, Jamal Bamford. Lewis. And you're like, wait a minute, how did I end up with Bamford? Like, this is how you end up with a Jared Bowen in your team before game week one. You know, you just start to get in your head about the game week that's right in front of you, you know, which can be a little scary. Final question. This is an easy one. Mix asks, which goalkeeper would you go for on a wild card? Who's your keeper?
Josh, step into my DeLorean. We have to go back to the future. I was just so dead certain about Matt Ryan before the season. And I was just like, scoreboard, look at the stats. That's my guy. He's my, you know, to use the Australian parlance, is my mate. And I ended up being a total chump and going for McCarthy. Now I'm not saying, wow, Brighton kept a clean sheet in game week two over Newcastle. Therefore, Brighton, Matt Ryan, legends. Nick Pope.
You don't need the caveat. Even their loss to Chelsea, they're like more competent than Southampton has.
I think the thing to say here, though, for people shopping for goalkeepers is look at these score lines in game week two. Absolutely bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S, however you spell that word. Mm-hmm. Goals are flying in. I am not spending any money on goalkeepers. Yeah. There is not one moment where I'm like, well, maybe I can upgrade to a 5 million goalkeeper.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of where I'm at. It's a small pool of candidates for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I mean, I guess, you know, the one keeper that I would be maybe a little tempted by, and if he was 5 million instead of 5.5, I'd really consider it. And that would be Rui Patricio. Because I really do believe in Wolves' defense. I think they may, outside of Liverpool, have the best defense in the Premier League this season. At 5.5 million, it does feel like a lot of money. And honestly, you might want those three spots for your team. You know, like you may want a Wolves defender, Jimenez, and then a Wolves midfielder as well, right? I mean, you know, Potens and others are you know, even Traore, I think, is, especially if once they solve this right back issue, which is still kind of up in the air. You know, I think once that happens, the Traore moves further ahead, at 6.5 million, he really could end up being a pretty good deal. I don't know what happened this summer with his managed minutes, but I do think long-term he's a pretty assured starter in that side.
Okay, so that's my wild card. I will be updating on our Patreon Slack, and we'll talk more about this on our kitchen table session later in the week.
Perfect. That sounds good. All right. So let's take a quick break, and then we're going to answer five questions about game week three. Brennan, this is the new format. All right. Five questions about the upcoming game week answered in a second.
All right, gang. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. And unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need. just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30.
Brandon, the wait is finally over. Football of all stripes. Of all stripes, football is back. You may not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. You've heard us talk about them already. Bet Online is going the extra mile, though, Brandon, to make sure you get in every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, Brandon, your online sportsbook experts.
Nice.
Brandon, we're back. Game Week 3 kicks off on Saturday. Another very spread out Game Week 3. 10 matches at 10 different time slots. Brandon, say goodbye to your family once again because you are about to spend. It was funny. We actually met up this afternoon. We did a little hang in Prospect Park in Brooklyn. And I asked your wife, I said, well, I mean, how many matches does he watch? And she said, all of them. He watches every single one. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, that's what I figured.
She's actually been freaked out by this new season because there was a Saturday kickoff, late kickoff, 3 p.m. on the East Coast and an 8 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time kickoff here. And she's like, it's still going? Like, you got up before I did and it's still going. So this whole broadcast schedule is intense for people with families.
It's intense for everybody, I think. And I will say after the summer, I've kind of learned, today I started watching the Newcastle Brighton match and 20 minutes in, I was like, this is bad. I don't need to watch this at all. Yes. And even though I didn't have plans to leave the house or anything, I just turned off the TV. I was like, I don't need, I can watch the highlights later. This is not going to be a fun match. I knew that Liverpool Chelsea was on in 2 hours time. I was like, I need to like walk away for a while. So maybe we all have to learn this as sports fans. Spending 20 hours, this has nothing to do with fantasy. I'm just talking right now, but yeah, spending 20 hours a weekend watching these matches is a big commitment. And so I'm trying to pick my spots a little bit better. Although those Monday matches in Game Week 3 look pretty good. All right. So five questions for Game Week 3. The first one comes from me, Josh Landon. And the question is to you, although I'm going to ask it to myself as well. Who is Brandon, your Game Week 3 captain?
Well, the bus team, I've got the armband on Timo Werner, and I'm enticed by, whipping boy status at West Brom. But, despite me trying to justify my early wild card and say, well, on the one hand, we don't know a lot about these teams. On the other hand, do we know stuff? And I'm projecting a lot here. I'm expecting, at some point, it's going to gel for Chelsea, and if not against West Brom, when? I mean, I could fully see this match being a very tight 2-1 or a 1-0 victory for Chelsea, I think.
Or a 5-2. That's anything.
or that. I mean, I feel like West Brom have shown flashes of, I guess we could call it just acquitting themselves well. That's as much as I'm willing to flatter West Brom. Even though Slaven Bilic, like, what a colossal idiot this guy is. He just decides whatever. We don't need to talk about the red card he received, but like total bonehead guy.
Gibbs, that was an easy red. I mean, maybe Hamas sold it a little bit, but I mean, can't do that.
Bilic comes out and says, somebody asks him, well, what were you yelling at Mike Dean about at the halftime whistle? And he's like, well, there was a foul before that happened. And so if they would have called that, then that would have never. He was basically trying to minority report the match. And
thought crime. A thought crime had taken place before that red card.
sorry, Slaven. It doesn't work like that. Please get the fuck out of here. So I think Timo Werner is interesting, but if I were to go somewhere that I felt a little more assured, I think we have to put our money where our mouths are with Wolverhampton. And Jimenez against West Ham, I think, is my backup option. I think that's where I'm leaning.
Yeah, that's interesting. For me, it's Mo Salah home to Arsenal all the way. Until proven otherwise, I'm just going to keep captaining Mo Salah at home to everybody. I don't care who it is. I'm just going to keep doing that, and maybe it will fail occasionally, but most of the time it's not going to. And it's sort of like my decision to captain him at Game Week 1. I'm just not going to overthink it. I have Mo Salah. He costs $12 million. Anytime he's at home, I'm going to captain him. And maybe if, you know, like in game week 4, Man City play away to Leeds. And that, in a case like that, you probably have to captain Man City player. Like, that's just fantasy intelligence right there, you know. But I think in general, I didn't even know where Liverpool playing game week 4. I'm just saying, you know, what are they playing game week 4? Let's just do a little hunt here, Brandon. Liverpool play away to Aston Villa in game week 4. That's pretty tempting too. Yeah. But that's where it is, and I'm not even going to like throw any other rationalization other than that I just rate him highly. Unusual match for him. The weird moment, you could tell how little they were worried about losing that match, that they just, he openly fought with Trent about a free kick. Like, so embarrassing. Like, what are you guys doing? You know, it was like, it was so weird, like an open, you know, they cover their mouths or something. But in this case,
there is a feeling of the inmates running the asylum. You were talking last week about Mane missing a golden opportunity, and he and Salah just like laughing about it.
Yeah.
Like they thought it was hilarious. And that was the same thing with Salah and Trent over that free kick. They were openly fighting. They both looked over to, you know, parent teacher Jurgen Klopp, like, okay, who gets to take it? And it was just like, they don't care. Like, are they expecting to win anything this season? It's unclear.
And then he rolled the ball to Trent, but he rolled it like way too fast, so Trent had to like hurry, and like it was like nothing was going like 5 miles per hour. Yeah, like it was, you know, it was not like a gentle roll. It was like, you know, if you watch the replay of it, it was like, well, there was no one could score a free kick. You know, I don't know, it's just silly. The whole thing was just kind of absurd, but I still think they can score goals. I think Arsenal will try to win that match, and so I think that you know, the situation with Chelsea was that it was kind of a little surprising. It probably speaks to Chelsea being kind of, as we talked about earlier, like a little in between, a little bit of an identity crisis or something, right? I mean, not even having Azpilicueta. And I felt like they were honestly, maybe with like 10 minutes left, they made more of an effort, you know, around the time Werner won that penalty, but it didn't really feel like they were trying to win. It was, you know, there was, I don't know. It was just strange. I mean, normally, especially when a team's at home, even when it goes, when you're down a man, you do fight a little more. Maybe it speaks to not having that number 10 or something, but it just felt like they were like, all right, let's just get out of this match losing by as few goals as possible. I mean, didn't you feel that way a little bit too? It felt like from 45 to 80 minutes, it was kind of just whatever.
It makes you appreciate the approach from Guardiola and Klopp, where they sign a great new player. Like, Naby Keita is not a great example of this, but I'm thinking of Pulisic last season. Lampard, okay, I'm trying to come up with an example as Guardiola or Klopp, but the idea of it's going to take you like a month into the season before you've been reprogrammed, you understand the system that the team's going to play, and then you fit in. And I don't know if it's just because of injury or if there's pressure from the money spent, but Lampard is just like, I'm throwing new players in and there's no chemistry of any kind, and I'm just hoping they figure it out. I'm not seeing a lot of guidance happening from the sideline, and I think it's going to take them a while to develop any sort of cohesion at Chelsea.
Yeah, and like, what's up with Giroud? Like, he's not injured, right? Like, the guy was so good last season, and Werner has a lot of experience playing on the left, like behind a proper forward. And I don't really know why. I would be shocked if they didn't come up with a two forward system in game week 3 away to West Brom. And I don't know if it's Giroud just isn't getting any minutes at all. Didn't this guy score like the last 9 matches or something he played last season? I felt like
it's the age-old story with Giroud. It's always like, what's the story with him? Every time you play him, he does a job. And even if it's not a goal-scoring job, Giroud virtually always helps whatever team he's playing for, whether it's France or Arsenal or Chelsea. He always helps. He never hurts. And the fact that it's just Frank, I feel like, if you're in Frank's position, you would see an opportunity. That's a great way to ease Werner into the league.
Yeah.
Just give a put a big tree up front to just
totally
lay waste especially, to other defenders and help him.
Especially someone like Giroud, who, you know, is a complete forward, right? I mean, he is, you know, I mean, he's not Firmino in terms of his tracking back, but he can, you know, he can knock a ball down. He's unselfish. He, you know, mm-hmm. it seems like he, like you said, he's a perfect companion. I mean, I don't know, maybe Tammy could be that too. But I don't know, it's just strange. It feels like they're like, not really trying to win early on so much as they're trying to like figure out the best company. I don't know. It feels like they should be a little more pragmatic in their approach. Yeah. I don't know, but that's, you know, that's just where.
What do you think about? Okay. So I'm compelled by your Salah argument for captaincy. And I think we can round out this captaincy discussion just by talking about City real quick. Now, assuming City doesn't walk onto the pitch against Wolves and just all the players explode into red mist or something like that. But Leicester's defense ain't great, and they're hosting them in game week 4. Will they be the emerge as one of the favorite captaincy choices in game week 4?
Probably they probably should be. I think I just want to wait until I see how they look tomorrow before I really like you said, it's hard to imagine that it's anything other than it could be, you know, I don't want to get too into matches that'll be played nearly by the time a lot of people are listening, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're a little rusty tomorrow, much like Man United were over the weekend. It's part of the reason I went with Saiss over Ben Davis, which so far looks good because I'm on 1 point from Davis, but we'll see. I mean, Man City could certainly score 4 goals tomorrow too. So yeah, I think that they're a contender as well. I think that's a question that you and I can revisit on the Patreon pod in a couple days. So a question from Nick Wright, and he says, which bandwagon do you think is a sell/avoid? Which faller do you think is a buy? So I feel like we've talked a little bit about bandwagons already, but I think the faller question is interesting because there are a lot of very good players who've already fallen in price so far in the season. And is there anybody that just, you know, I don't know how much thought you've given to this question already, but is there anybody who has already dropped in price that you think is, you know, an interesting candidate, like somebody that you might, if not bring on your wild card, that you're certainly sort of watching to see, you know, to sort of see how they perform?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the fallers have been pretty justified. I was very interested to see that Saka earned a start and played so many minutes in game week 2 after not getting any shine, and Arsenal also having a midweek match coming up. And I think if Saka were to be a player that had consistent minutes, I'd say he's a great player at 5.5, but that's just never going to be the case.
Yeah, Brendan, a couple more that stand out to me are Ziyech and Pulisic, who both have already fallen for Chelsea. I mean, you know, once Ziyech comes in, he's exactly the kind of player that they really need right now. So he'll be sub 8 million when he comes back in, which is really, really quite a nice price. And so once James Rodriguez gets his first injury of the season, that's going to be a kind of a perfect
his first, but not his last.
I mean, I hope he stays healthy. I've got him on my team right now, and he looks awesome. But I'll actually talk about him in just a second here. And obviously in Pulisic too, you know, 8.4 million, but he's a 10 million level player when fit and firing. I mean, he had moments in the summer where he looked like an absolutely essential fantasy prospect. So, and you know, maybe I'm a little biased as an American, but I think even the English would agree with me on that, Brandon. I would also look to Leeds United, and it's kind of amazing. There's just a wealth of interesting options on that Leeds United team. And Rodrigo is a player who has already fallen in price. And I think that a lot of that is, you know, I get it, because if you weren't following things too closely, you may not know that the Bielsa takes, you know, a month or so to to really get his players into the system. Like, he does not pull a Frank Lampard and just drop people in right away, right? It takes a little more time for them to get acclimated to his system. And so that's why we've seen Rodrigo get, you know, 28 minutes in game week one and 45 minutes in game week two. But I think that in a couple of weeks, I think Rodrigo is going to be a sub 6 million forward. This is the starting forward for the Spanish national team. And he's going to be available on what looks like a very attacking Leeds United team for under 6 million. So I think maybe starting around game week six, when they have a run where they play, they actually kind of a tricky start for them in general. Although, you know, I mean, they've already put three past Liverpool. So, I mean, clearly maybe we shouldn't be so worried about how they look, but you know, they have like a little run of decent matches starting in game week five, beginning especially good in game week six. So he's just one that I would keep an eye on a little bit, a little off the radar. Okay. I think now.
All right. The next question here comes from Dave Newell, who wants to know, is James Rodriguez a cut price KDB? I feel like James reminds me a little bit more of Bruno, but then I have to stop and think, is there a difference between any of these players?
Right.
I don't know.
I was really, I don't know what to say. I mean, other than he looks awesome. I kind of went into him signing not really knowing what to expect. You know, I sort of felt like maybe he was slightly overrated. And I think I just wasn't thinking about it the right, I don't know. It's sort of, I hadn't put all the pieces together. I was sort of, in general, when a team signs a kind of slightly older, you know, he's 29 player who hasn't really hacked at the you know, the very top teams, and you know, there's always some explanation, there's always some reason why, you know, but often it doesn't really work, you know, when you slot him in. And with James, it's kind of the opposite. I don't know if it's because he's with Ancelotti. I don't know if it's because there are no fans in the stands and it gives him a little time to get acclimated. I don't, you know, whatever the factor is, he looks incredible. He really does. And he looked that way in the Spurs match. And it was a real eye test move for me. I mean, he also credited five chances in that Spurs match. But you know, it was that, and then just, you know, obviously playing West Brom at home, everything sort of clicked to make him a really good pick for game week two. But then watching the match, I thought, well, geez, this guy, I mean, honestly, he should have done even better than a goal and an assist. He could have had multiple additional assists in that match. I mean, you know, if Richarlison doesn't scuff what became DCL's second goal, I mean, that really should have been a goal for Richarlison. He's
had horrible finishing to start the season.
Yeah, weirdly, but yeah, he looks incredible. Richarlison looks awesome, but it's, yeah, the finishing has been poor. I mean, everything but the finishing has been good, but yeah, what do you have, three assists in Saturday's match? So I think, I mean, cut price KDB, I mean, yeah, I mean, viewed through that lens as a cut price KDB, sure. I mean, I'll agree with that. He's probably on pens too. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, I think that's shorthand, whether it's a cut price KDB or whatever, it's just shorthand for this guy is an FPL asset. He's an FPL stud. He does a little bit of everything, and there will be weeks where he does a lot of everything. So, I think that makes him a great prospect. Totally agree.
Yeah,
we're both in agreement there.
It's fun. It's fun this season. There are way too many good players for 11 spots, for 11 starting spots. It's really it's very cool. I mean, I don't remember. I mean, this is kind of off. I don't want to get too off topic here, but I just can't remember there ever being so many interesting players to have. I mean, you probably think about this in your wild card right now, but I feel like I could have an 11 that I really liked on a wild card, and I could pick 11 different starters on a wild card and really like that version of my team as well.
We are so far from big at the back, and not just because teams apparently can't defend anymore, but it is, we have money that we need to be spending in the midfield and the forward slots more than we have in a long time. So I'm with you. It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I know, like, from a purist standpoint, you know, these 4-3 Leeds Fulham is not a beautiful match order, but from fantasy perspective, it was a blast. That Mitro header, I was like, give it to me. I'm not going to say injected my veins, Brandon. That's not me. That's a cliche that I'm not going to do.
You're not an intravenous drug user.
I recognize that it's there as a cliche that I could have used. All right, yeah. Two more questions. Kira says, with so many players getting big returns for an exciting new options, how patient can we afford to be with big ticket assets who aren't returning? And I'm thinking here specifically of Timo Werner, who has one assist, should have had two, probably should have been able to take that penalty himself.
Thank God Jorginho finally had one of his stupid, like, hopping penalties finally blocked. Like, just like credit to Alisson, just obviously being brilliant and knowing what kind of BS was heading his way. But like, I'm done with these fancy Dan penalties. Let's abolish them.
Just, I mean, what did Mitro do? He just stepped up there and even, the keeper guessed right and didn't matter because he hit it so hard. You know, that's what Salah does too.
The power of Serbia was behind him.
Well, just hit it hard, right? It's so hard to, I mean, I feel like Bruno usually does this too. Or it's just like, if you just hit it hard, you know, it's going to be hard to
Bruno,
stop.
Bruno does do the Jorginho hopping stuff too, that nonsense. But he's yet to miss one. He will though.
Yeah, not as bad as Pogba, though. All right, anyway, so, all right, we've got, I guess we didn't actually answer the question, but I'm thinking in many ways, all of the big players have delivered now. I mean, it's hard to, with Salah scoring today, it's hard to think of anybody. I mean, I think of
Mane. With Mane scoring today, right?
Excuse me, of course. Yeah. Maybe Aubameyang's been a little disappointing. Werner, a little bit.
I think that's right. It's less at this stage with the big ticket players. It's less how have they returned, and it's more how have they looked and how have their teams looked. And the plan to dump Aubameyang in game week 3 has actually come together perfectly, because even though Arsenal have put their results together, their attack has been shapeless at times. It's not been, it just hasn't been as cunning as I want it to be for a 12 million asset. So, it's less about how many results did Aubameyang get. It's where that there's no value there.
And I was really bummed out when Tierney was injured early in the lead up, because Kolasinac was awful, I thought, in that match.
He was invisible, to be kind.
He kept rolling the ball. These passes that were so slow, they kept getting intercepted. It was like he would just sort of gently telegraph the pass. It was, that was not fun.
Yeah. So I think that if you have these big ticket premium players where their teams are at least look like they have potential, then that gives you some confidence to hang on. That's like, then Spurs just defies all of that. Much thanks to Hasenhüttl.
All right, final question comes from producer Matt, and I think it's really relevant with Spurs playing Newcastle at home. And we have talked about this a little bit already, but producer Matt says, can you please help our FPL population keep a cool head about Sun? So
it was a training match for him. It was basically just, you do this in FIFA every single time. You're like, smash that triangle button for the through ball. Our friend James Alcott from that FPL show was praising Harry Kane's vision for that Spurs match. And I'm thinking, what vision? Kane was told, dink the ball. Just dink the ball, find a gap, and just dink it. So he wasn't even looking most of the time he was passing to Son.
Yeah. I think that was impressive.
All right, I mean, like, impressive. I couldn't do it. I'll admit, I couldn't do it. But the gap was so big. The gulf between the Southampton line and McCarthy, twiddling his thumbs back in his 6-yard box was astronomical. So I just think Son was God, I'm trying not to sound super negative with him, but I just do not feel like that was a powerful performance by Spurs.
Yeah, it was a weird one. It just was a weird one. I agree. I it was like a 30 minute. Honestly, it was the whole second half. You would have thought they were up two men. I mean, it was so dominant. And but yeah, I think you have to go with what we've seen this summer, what we saw their first two matches, if you include the Europa League. It's not that I'm dismissing this match entirely. It was an impressive performance, but I'm with you. I maybe Newcastle losing so poorly at home to Brighton will actually make things tougher too, because I think they now are going to have to play a little bit better defensively and really be conscious of not getting quite as exposed as they were in the first 10 minutes at home to Brighton. I mean, that was just I don't know if they like believe their own hype a little bit too much or what. I'm a little surprised that Callum Wilson did nothing. The truth, Brandon, yeah. I mean, how many pro-truth words have we said on this podcast?
Too many.
Yeah. And did not happen. So, and then Andy Carroll got hooked at halftime, and it was like, I guess I watched probably the first 35 minutes of that match. And when I saw that he got hooked, I was like, oh, right. Well, I mean, I honestly didn't remember he was on the pitch. Like, I can't remember even seeing Andy Carroll in that match in the first half. So it's a little weird that they bought all these midfielders and they were still trying this two forward lineup. It doesn't really seem like the smartest use of the team, but
yeah, there are some people out there who put money down on Newcastle getting relegated this season, and they were sweating at the end of game week one. They're like, wow, this team might be pretty good.
So I still think they might be okay.
There's new life for those people.
Yeah, I still think they might be okay. I don't know what the deal is with Sam Maxson. He's got this ankle injury. We'll see if he's ready for this weekend. It's very annoying for me. If not, I may have to burn four. I don't know.
His tackle on Lamptey was criminal. I mean, he just gave a goal away in the first 5 minutes on one of the laziest tackles you'll ever see in the penalty box.
Yeah, it was, Lamptey. What a player. Jeez, he's...
He played so hard, injured himself. What a legend. Yeah. He looked so good.
Brandon, that's your pod. Good luck to everybody in Game Week 3. Good luck on your wild card. You and I will talk more later on this week when we do our Patreon podcast. And I guess we'll go right into this. A quick one additional shout out for Patreon. If you want to say thank you for us making this podcast, if you want access to a bunch of bonus features that we talked about earlier. If you want to talk fantasy and many other things on our Slack, go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. We would really, really appreciate it. And Brendan, do you want to say a quick thank you to our Patreon supporters?
Oh, I'd love to. Thanks to Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, DeBig Gafford, Bobas Kuhn, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wagner, Lo Dowell, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forbig Skoging, Paul Herzig, Kaya Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, FPL Merch, at FPL Merch, Carrie Swanson, Brandon B., Paul Scanlon, Kieran Screeton, James Hurd, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Producer Matt, Michael Uong, Bruce Kerr, Alper Paxoy, Nicholas Verdonkis, Sam Schauer, Henry Baker, and Will Husby. And Josh, a special shout out for my friend Mark out there listening. I know he's listening with his dad, Matt. So thanks, guys, for tuning in.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. If you want to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, that really helps people find the podcast. And that's great because, Brandon, I'm growth obsessed. I just want us to, I want this podcast to be in everyone's ears all the time. So go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast is where you can find us, where you can subscribe, all that stuff. If you want to follow us on social media, we're on social media. And you can find all the information on alwayscheating.com or just Google us. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in a week. And sad to say, Brandon, that Lord Soloth looks like he's not coming back to Spurs anymore. It looks like he is going to sign with RB Leipzig. Very sad about that, but his memory will live on forever.
I blame Gareth Bale for this tragedy, this tragic breaking.
So you didn't even talk about Bale. I'll say that for next week, I guess.
Okay, yeah, let's do it. I mean, it's going to be a month before it sounds like it will even be relevant before he can even get on a pitch. So we'll see.
True. All right, I'll see you in a week. Bye.